All right. Good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. Good morning. It is September the 29th. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. Hope it's awesome wherever you were at. It's a bit overcast, a little damp in the air. I don't know. Someone told me the other day it was supposed to rain all week. It has not rained all week, but it has been sort of looking like it's going to rain all week. And I saw my buddy Dave yesterday. He called me last night. Well, I saw him yesterday, and then he called me yesterday. He's like, hey, can you come paddle at 5? I was like, I'd love to. But I am working, so I couldn't. But they went out and did 6 miles in 20-mile-per-hour winds out in the ocean, and I was just like, sons of bitches, that is awesome. And sort of jealous. I think I get to paddle on Sunday. I am, you know, it's funny. I think I shared, I don't know. This podcast lately has been a bit scattered for me. I do a couple, they don't finish them, start over, whatever. So, but I don't know if I shared this, but my son and I have been going to the gym. And that's been really great for many reasons, right? Just to hang out with him. You know, he asked to do something as a parent. You know, I think for me, I can only speak for myself, but I'm ready. I'm ready to jump into action and help him out. And so we've been having a fun week, except I am so fucking sore. Holy cow. I mean, I've been paddling all summer, and I get a little sore, but man, we went to the gym. We did some chest, right, and some biceps. And some back, and some, we did everything, you know, we've been taking it super easy, right? Not a lot of weight. In fact, we were doing bench press. I was just using a bar, 45 pounds, right? You see people with 4 or 5 plates. I'm that guy. I am just lifting with a bar because I have to be careful, right? I don't want to hurt anything. I just want to keep the muscles moving. So, and I'm also, you know, I'm trying to kind of stay, I'm trying to lift with Sam, right? I don't want to have my whole lifting schedule. And then Sam's, we're trying to kind of keep it close. I just want to support him. But my God, I am so sore. And we were supposed to we went 3 days, and then we were supposed to go yesterday, and I let him sleep in. And then this morning I came in. I'm like, are we going? He's like, I go, do you want to sleep? He goes, yes. I go, all right. So he slept in today. But really, 3 out of 5 ain't bad. So I'm proud of him. I'm proud of us. And that's one thing we've been doing this week. But it's been a crazy week. You know, my schedule kind of got, I get into a routine, right? And routines are comfortable and they're easy to do, right? But I shared that I had to speak at that rehab. And you know, what happens is that I think about it for, you know, a week, right? And then I think about it sort of the week after. And I hadn't really, I mean, it's not like I have to address anything, but it brought up like a lot of old feelings of what it was like going into rehabs. Tell me who I am. That's the, you know, the trippy thing about, you know, as a guy that's 55 years old and done a lot of stuff in my life, there are things that I've done which I've seeked out, and there's things that I've done which I've been sent to, right? And it's just, it's such a trip, the difference, right? I was sent to rehab at 15 to learn who I was, right? Or at least for my parents to try to figure out who I was. And that was just a kid at 15 wanting to smoke pot. That was it. But that was a huge conflict between my parents and I. And, you know, back in those days, this is probably 1983. You know, marijuana was the devil's weed. It was, you know, it was going to ruin your whole life. I can't say that it helped it. I wouldn't recommend, you know, for young people to smoke pot. You know, at some point, if you get, you know, an education and you've established yourself and you want to do that, that's up to you. But definitely didn't help me as a teenager. It definitely, people say it's a gateway drug. I guess so. Right. But I guess, you know, smoking pot, sort of the gate that got opened was the gate to hell, right? Which was the gate that allowed self out. Ego, pride, whatever it is, this real issue that I have, that when I put in something that serves self like that, man, self gets all pumped up and it's hard to put it back in the bottle. But I had no understanding of that. I was quite selfish at that age anyway. I was a kid, right? Everything, my whole day revolved around my parents and teachers and friends and whoever always doing catering to me, right? So it's a very selfish existence anyway. So I didn't realize it. I would look back. I remember there was a time, I've even shared this before, but I remember as a kid at a pizza party we had a soccer game. I don't know, it might have been the end of the year, but we had a pizza party, and I just remember getting my piece of pizza on my plate. And then, like, looking over and, like, counting the numbers of pieces that were left, because I wanted to make sure that I was going to get another one, right? I'm doing math, right? I'm doing math, trying to figure it out, because I'm selfish. I want, you know, I can't just enjoy the piece that's on the plate. I'm already predicting and counting which piece I want next. And that would just be the tip of the iceberg for a guy like me, just full of self, full of me, full of I. And but like I said, I think that's probably pretty natural. I mean, I have kids. I see it in them. They're very selfish. They don't know any better. But I think the problem is that when I started to, you know, first try alcohol and then marijuana was my thing. I wasn't a big fan of alcohol at all. Marijuana was fun. We had a lot of fun, but my parents hated it, right? And so that would be the beginning of rehab, right? That would be the beginning. And I got sent to 15 to New Life, and it was horrible. I look back at it now, because I'm a little separated from it now. It was a pretty cool experience, but in the moment, at the time, I fucking hated it. It was horrible. And I was in my relationship with my girlfriend, which was just as bad as the drugs, right? My first drug was my first girlfriend. Our immaturity and our selfishness almost ruined me, right? And so that was my first real run. But, you know, that's the age I was at. And so it was just a horrible experience, because I had no desire to change anything. My parents wanted to fix me. I think they wanted to get the marijuana devil demon out of me. And it worked. I mean, I quit. I was on a bad path at that time. I was going to Highland. I was ditching school, hanging out with my girlfriend, just whatever. And so when I came out of that program, I was in there for 3 months. When I came out of that program, I went to a new school, sort of like a special school, a special one. But it was more focused, you know, less students. I think we had a class of 10. Port Vanier was the school. This is all took place in Albuquerque. But I got back on track. You know, I got back on track, and then I headed out, left that school, went to a new high school, Manzano, and everything was going good. And then I started hanging out with some new friends, right? And these guys were great, not bad guys, but they liked doing what I liked doing. They liked Metallica, right? They liked rock and roll. They liked guitar, and they liked smoking pot. And I got back into smoking pot again, and that would be the next battle. And, you know, it was a tough time. And then we moved to San Diego, and then I got into the up game, and that would be another continuation of the battle with my parents. It was always, you know, instead of like just throwing me out. Right? Get out. Listen, if these are the rules, if you can't follow them, get out of the house. They always tried to fix me. And I get it, because I think I would do the exact same thing with my children. I say I wouldn't, but damn. I don't know. If my parent, if my kids got on drugs, I'm not sure how I'd react. The worst part about it is you sort of know, like, there's not much I can do. I can take you to a meeting. I can tell you about a meeting, but that's about it. There's nothing that I can do to get you sober. Hopefully, everything I've done in my life will help you stay sober or, you know, not do that in the first place, but there's no guarantees. I don't do what I do to hopefully that they won't get, you know, involved with. Because actually, the worst thing that they could get involved with is alcohol, and it's perfectly legal. So anyway, that's their own battle. But the yeah, it was just, you know, another battle and then another battle and then eventually, you know, back into another rehab. And that rehab, that's the one I was there for 30 days, that was more like the one I spoke at on Monday. You know, snacks, graham crackers, sugary coffee, treats everywhere, and pajamas and nice facility. Coloring with crayons. I mean, whatever it is, but that was more like the one I was at in San Diego. It was nice. It was a nice break, but at the whole time, just not really wanting to get sober. Alcohol, all the stuff that I, you know, when I was doing speed, when I was smoking pot, all those things, I had a lot of fun on those things, right? The meth was starting to grind me down. I was looking at big problems. If I hadn't escaped California when I did, the story could be a lot different. So, but up in, you know, up until that point, I had a lot of fun, minus going to jail and stuff, but had a lot of fun, had a lot of fun on pot. Alcohol was the one that really brought me to my knees. That was the one that gave me the full beat down. And I think it's because it was legal, right? Because in my mind, I'm like, well, it's legal, so I can do it. And I can do as much as I want because it's legal, right? Don't give me no shit, mom, dad. You know, I'd go over and drink with my parents. I'd go after work and I'd drink with my mom. My mom, you know, I don't know, I guess she was an alcoholic. She was just really well behaved. She would just kick it, right? She was always having the, you know, her big red solo cup of wine. But she, you know, my mom had rules, right? She only drank two. It was a lot of ice, Tommy, a lot of ice. And but she, you know, whatever. She was fantastic. To the very end, really just had a couple little issues we had to help old Jeannie out with, but for the most part, very well behaved, unlike her son. but we used to drink, you know, together, and it was all, you know, it was all copacetic because, you know, it's all legal. And, but that would be really the green light to dive into, especially, a guy who was so addicted to speed. And when I left California, it left a huge hole in my soul that I had used to fill with other drugs. And so when I got to this situation, and even not even really liking, you know, the one thing I never liked about alcohol was the sloppiness of it. Like, I just used to get sloppy. And I hated that. I mean, I did it every day, didn't stop because of it, but was one of the things I hated is just, you know, you're sluggish and you're sloppy. That's why I never got into like downers and pills and Xanax and all that other bullshit. It's because it felt like my feet were in concrete, right? And like I was always an up guy. And when I was doing that out in California, you know, no sloppy, very aware of what's going on. But, you know, thank God that was not here when I moved here. And I had to switch over to the alcohol. But, you know, I never liked the sloppy side of it, but the green light was on and that's what I did. But my story's not unique. Just like I was just talking to a client the other day about their experience with alcohol. Same thing, you know, just doing the same old shit. Nothing special, but grinding down. So yeah, I'm, the rehab thing starting, the week starting off with the rehab thing was interesting. And I've still been thinking about it all week. In fact, I went to my dentist. I got to get a tooth pulled. And my dentist's office is right next door to the rehab that I spoke at on Monday, which is kind of cool. It used to be actually a local hospital. I think it was the Milford Hospital. And they built a new hospital, and they've turned that hospital into a rehab, which is great. And I would love to go up there and speak again. I would absolutely do that again. But yeah, so that was, you know, the week's, that's how the week was going. And then obviously the other meeting I was supposed to go to was on the 12th step, which was, you know, having had the spiritual awakening, we carry the message to our, oh, read it, Tom, for God's sakes. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. I like how it says, we tried to carry. Did we not make it? Why doesn't it say, we try to? We continue to try to. Or we tried. I don't know. But having, you know, that would have been the step we would have read on Monday. And, you know, it's true. You know, having had the spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, which I have had, you know, my job now is to try to be there for the next, to try to be there for the next alcoholic. And, you know, I love that message. And then going to the Wednesday night meeting, the guy spoke, and his message was, you know, half measures avail us nothing. And I remember coming into this program and hearing that and thinking, well, of course, right? That's how life is, man. You get what you put in. But there are some little pitfalls that I've learned over time about this 12-step program that is absolutely true. If I only do it half-ass, I won't get anything. You know, sobriety, when I put down that drink, the definition of sober is to be free of a drink. So when I put down that drink, I am officially sober, right? I get, you know, one of the things that, like, the meeting on Wednesday, we, you know, there's sort of this feeling like this is all alcohol's fault, right? This is an alcohol problem. This is because of alcohol. Well, yeah, if you got a DUI, it's absolutely because of alcohol, right? But if we put down this drink, there's other problems, right? And it's the thinking, right? Sober to be free of drink, but the serenity is to be free of the thinking, right? And the thinking is what caused me back in the day to pick up another drink, right? It wasn't because I fell into a bottle of alcohol, right? It was because there was a voice in my head that told me to. And that's because I had not found serenity. And the reason I hadn't found serenity, because I had only done half measures. Half measures avail us no serenity. No serenity, the thinking comes back, and then all of a sudden you're justifying dumb shit, and next thing you know, you're having a drink again. And so as obvious as important it is to put down the drink, you've got to find serenity. And so there's a couple pitfalls that I've noticed over the time. One of them, and a guy shared about this at the meeting, was, you know, surrendering to the fact that you cannot drink alcohol anymore. I don't remember if I made that decision in the beginning. I knew that I was really bad, right? I did not come into this program. I think, you know, my two stints at rehabs probably taught me that more than likely the end of my life is, if, you know, if I want to have a decent end of my life, it's probably not going to include alcohol. If I want to have a rough, tough, distressed, beat up, horrible existence, it will probably include alcohol. Right, so when I came into this program, I was pretty much under the idea that I would not be drinking again. Right, I did not come into the program wanting to learn how to drink. I've heard people say that. People say, I came here because I thought you'd teach me how to drink. No, I didn't come in looking for that. I don't know what I came in for, but I pretty much has assumed that I would not be drinking again. The idea of never drinking again kind of blew my mind, so I'm not sure, but yeah, it's just, it's, you know, to surrender that I'm not going to drink alcohol again, which I, you know, you still have to stay in the day, right? You can't just say, I'll never drink again. That's dangerous. I remember saying that as well. So you have to find a spot, but I think, you know, as long as you're not coming in to learn how to drink again, hopefully that's not what is on your list. But, you know, to surrender to some of these things, and that was one of them. A guy shared that he hadn't, and it would later come up and bite him in the ass. But the other one was this, you know, this fifth step. You know, I've done the fifth step and I've done it half-ass and I didn't get anything out of it, right? But I think when I did that, I think it said more about who the guy I was at the time, right? Instead of who the guy I am today. And that guy that did half measures, I had been sent here, right? This is because I had been caught, right? This is something I had to do, right? These were the 12 tasks of this program. And so, like my whole life, anything in my life that has been a task, I've done half-ass. School, everything in my life. Got to go to school, half-ass. You know, I become a victim to all of it. And I only want to do the part that allows me to get through it, and I don't want to do anything extra. And that's exactly how it reflected in my program. And so when I had to do that fifth step, I didn't share everything. And I was so embarrassed, right? They're just dumb shit, but you just don't want to talk about it. And you definitely don't want to tell some stranger, right? And so I didn't. And I don't know if that's why I drank again, but it wasn't helping, right? It wasn't helping that I wasn't completely diving into that fifth step. But like my sponsor said, when I changed my sobriety date with the pain pills, he goes, if you don't change your sobriety date, you're never going to get sober. And I'm like, what does that mean? I mean, I'm not drinking, I'm sober. What he meant was if you don't change that sobriety date, you're never going to find serenity, right? Because serenity to me is the fortress that keeps out the bad drinking demons, right? Those are the serenity is where I find, you know, where I can take that a breath, right, and take my second thought, or restrain from pen and tongue, or try to think the conversation through, like, you know, think the drink through. I have to think the conversation through. I have to think the appointment through. I have to think a lot of things through, right? Because I'll paint a pretty nice picture for the beginning of it, but a lot of the times, you know, it's like hanging out downtown, right, where the drugs are. It's pretty. It's fun to get outside. But we know what the end of that fucking picture looks like. And I have to think it all the way through. But that's serenity, right? That is humility. That's a third step. We turn our will, thinking, and our actions, life, or our lives, actions, over to the care of a higher power, right? I have to think, you know, in the past, my thinking was a little bit more on the shaded side, and the darker side. We'll just go down there and see what's going on, right? I know better. But, you know, but today I say, I wouldn't do that. No, I'm not going to do that because I know what that's going to lead me. And I know what the outcome is going to be. So I have to make sure my thinking and my actions are in the more of the light, right, in the good side. But I learned that through this program. This is about serenity. You know, I can't, when I came in or before I came into this program, I was pretty uneducated when it came to this kind of stuff. I'd be like, yeah, I can go down there. I shouldn't be any problem. Like, you know what they say, if you hang out in a barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. Well, I hung out in too many barbershops and was shocked when I ended up with haircuts. Serenity has taught me you can't go to the barbershop, man. It's not working for you. And so, yeah, you know, the 12th step is awesome. We have to give that message. We have to continue to carry the message to the next alcoholic. I mean, it's an inconvenience. It's a pain in the ass, but that's what we have to do. We have to be constantly inconvenienced because self just cannot have his way the whole time. You know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. You know, meetings are an inconvenience. That's what they're supposed to be, right? You should be absolutely loving what you're doing at home. Absolutely hate going to the meeting because you hate pulling away from the wonderful experience you're having with your family or whatever it is, but it is what we have to do, and we have to go to that meeting, and it shouldn't be awesome, right? It should be a pain in the butt. But once we're there, we realize, this feels good, and we enjoy it, and then we come home and we're better. You know, if you're going to a meeting and you're having more fun at the meeting than you were at home, that's probably a social event. I'm not saying don't go, but you know, over time there will be a moment where meetings become a pain in the ass. I'm sort of going through this right now. I'm changing my meetings, right? Because I'm burned out on these meetings. At least I'm not burned out. I need something different. I just have to make sure that I complete the move, right? Because in the past I've thought, these meetings are getting stale. I'll stop going, and did not complete the move. And then next thing you know, I wasn't going to meetings anymore. I do not want that to happen. I want to go to a new meeting. So like tonight, what's tonight? Friday. I'm going to go to a new meeting. There's a new 6 o'clock meeting. It's not new, but it's an option, right? The meeting I was doing on Friday nights, you know, I shared that, you know, I'd given the commitment away. The guy, you know, was taking the commitment. Well, he went back out and drank. And so I had to take the commitment back, which is fine. But he's back, right? And he's been back for a while. And I told him last week, I said, you can have your commitment back. You know, I didn't sign up for this never-ending commitment because you can't fucking get sober. You can have a commitment back. And he's doing good, right? It's not a big problem. It's his problem, not mine. But I don't want the commitment anymore. Somebody else should be doing it. That's the whole point of it. The other meeting I go to on Monday, that guy, he keeps that meeting. It's his meeting. It's his meeting. Doesn't let it go for other people to take it as a commitment. That's fine, man, but I've done it for a year. I need some fresh blood. I need to hear new things, right? I don't like it when people take a meeting hostage and then, like, forget to ask people to speak, or when you come into the meeting, they're like, hey, can you sit up front with me? It's like, dude, you have the fucking commitment. Take care of it, especially if you're going to take the fucking thing hostage. And so I'm just going to do a different meeting. I love those guys. Hey, love you. Love him. I love what they're doing. Appreciate you, but I got to find something a little more exciting. So I'm going to go to a 6 o'clock meeting tonight on Friday, and I'm going to, you know, mix it up a bit. And I'm going to that new 6 o'clock meeting on Mondays. I'll keep my home group because I love my home group. But I'm having to make adjustments because I need to keep it fresh because I've been down that road before. Let's see. Let's see if we can do. I have had a lot of trouble with this meeting. I mean, with this podcast. So I apologize. I don't know. Not running out of things. You know, what I'm having trouble with is my memory. I think I might have shared this before. I'm 55. I have beat my brain up with drugs and alcohol, and I feel it in my brain. I feel it in my memory. I feel it in my thinking. I struggle. I don't think I'm getting dementia or Alzheimer's, but I struggle a bit with my memory. And sometimes I'll be talking on this podcast about something, and then I'll be like, oh, yeah, and it'll remind me of something. And then I go on to that thing, and then I forgot where I came from. And then I'm like, what were you talking about? And then I'm like, okay. And then I'll be like, I'm not feeling it, so I'll stop. So I'm struggling a little bit with my memory, and I think it's just age. You know, I don't prepare, right? It's probably obvious. You know, it's like, no shit, Tom. But I just like to try to sit down. I don't want to start to prepare. I might write words down to help guide me. I don't know if this is the slow goodbye, the quiet slow goodbye, but I definitely feel it in my brain. You know, if you're new to trying to get sober and you don't have a lot of time drinking, get sober, man. Because I will tell you that this disease will fucking kick your ass, and it'll fuck up your brain, fuck up your computer. My computer's all fucked up from it. I do okay, but, you know, I drift off the path and I get lost. I can't remember where I came from at some point. And so, but I'm doing the best I can, and I'm having fun with it still. So I just need to. I think what I'm doing is I'm putting too much pressure on myself, and it shouldn't be that. This is just something casual, not a professional, just a guy chatting. Maybe because I know a lot more people are listening, that it's making me get in my head about it. So doing the best I can. I hope it's okay. I do appreciate people listening. And if, like I said, if you want to share it with somebody, tell somebody, that's cool. I appreciate that too. So today's day of the reflection, September the 29th. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Absolutely. Absolutely. I love going to meetings with newcomers, right? I like, you know what I like best is to see the guy the next week and make sure I go over and say, hey, man, how are you? You know, and shake hands. And I think that that is a good example for when a newcomer comes and they're here. I know that when I was new and someone kept, like, to remember my name, right, or to make a special walk over just to say good morning or good evening, always made me feel good. I was such a piece of shit. It always was awesome. So, yeah, I love it. I love newcomers. I don't get too invested in them because not a lot of them stay, but, you know, whatever. All right, Alcoholics Anonymous, page 89. A man came to the meeting drunk, interrupted the speakers, stood up and took his shirt off, staggered loudly back and forth for coffee, demanded to talk, and eventually called the group secretary an unquotable name and walked out. I was glad he was there. Once again, I saw that I had been like that. No, once again, I saw what I had been like. But I also saw what I still am and what I still could be. I don't have to be drunk to want to be the exception and the center of attention. I have often felt abused and responded abusively when I was simply being treated as a garden variety human being. The more the man tried to insist he was different, the more I realized that he was, that he and I were exactly alike. Yeah, I don't know if I've shared about that, but I was at a meeting and a guy came in drunk and I was like, I cannot believe this guy came in here drunk. Like, this is an AA meeting, right? Our bottoms don't have to be that low, but sometimes it does happen and a person will come in drunk. And it's happened recently. I don't know if the guy was drunk or just really, you know, beat up. But it is, you know, it's a reminder. I see it all the time. You know, I think I talked about it. I've been watching that Jail and a little bit of Intervention. Don't ask me why. I know better. I don't know. But every time I watch those shows, I see me. Loud, obnoxious, you know, everybody's fault, the jail's fault. I can't believe I got arrested. I didn't do anything, right? It's just, it's, you know, when I see it, it's like being possessed by a devil. I see these people as possessed by an evil spirit. Or the alcohol is just open the gateway for the evil spirit to run rampant, but it is a spirit and it's evil and it's a different person. You know, it's so funny. They, you know, there'll be a person they'll bring in that jail and they're fucking out of their mind, right? And then all of a sudden they put them in that chair. They're going crazy. Oh, fuck you. It's not my fault. And then they wheel them into the room, shut the door, come back in 4 hours, and they're like a different person. They're like, you going to calm down? Yes. Can you sit out here with the regular people? Yes. It's like, what happened 4 hours ago, right? And that alcohol just allows that fucking demon to come out and be whatever the demon wants to be, right? And then the alcohol starts to fade and the demon goes away and it's just like this miraculous transformation. And it's funny because these guys in jail, they're like, yeah, we see this all day. I'm going to put them in here. They'll be back. They'll be better. All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you listening. I went a little bit long, but have a great day. It's Friday. Get to a meeting. Stay sober. Later.